You're listening to Charlottesville's Podcasting Network. I'm Dan Gould. Candidates for the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors and the City of Charlottesville Council gave their views on many of the issues and priorities for the county and city. The candidates spoke at the Wednesday, August 12, 2015 meeting of the Senior Statesmen of Virginia. The meeting was held at the Senior Center in Charlottesville. Following the presentation, questions were taken from the audience. The program was moderated by senior reporter for 1070 WINA News Radio, Chris Callahan. Chris has been with the station for 41 years and was honored in 2014 by the Associated Press Broadcasters for the Best News Operation of the Year. Our podcast is entitled Local Candidates Forum. Here's Chris Callahan.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. We're going to try to run the show on time to the extent possible. I understand Wes Bellamy has to bow out at a certain point in the before we get to 2:15. When do you have to leave, Wes? Well, somewhere around. Okay. So we'll try to make sure that Wes, hello.
Hey there.
Got to really be direction. Okay. All right, Wes has got to bow out at around 2:15, so we'll try to make sure that he gets to be as much as possible part of this. I'm going to have each one of the five candidates that are up here give their opening statement. There will not be any closing statements at the end of this because, of course, we also have the supervisors who are coming on right after you. So if you can do it in less than 3 minutes, that would be great. We're going to do them in the order that's closest to me down the line, so it'll be pretty obvious. We're not going to skip around. We'll start with Wes, then we'll go to Scott Bandy, Kathy Galvin, Anson Parker, and Mike Signer. And then after we hear from all three of those, then I'll have a question for each of you. And we'll start with, okay? And we also have a stoplight, which is a somewhat primitive device that he's holding there. It's the standard red, yellow, green. Since this is a very transportation-oriented community, I'm sure you'll know the significance of the red, yellow, and green. All right, and we'll start right now with Wes, your opening statement.
Good afternoon, everyone. Well, we got to do a little better than that. I'm a teacher, so I like to call and respond. Good afternoon, everyone. Much better, much better. Make me feel like I'm at home. My name is Wes Bellamy. I am a candidate for Charlottesville City Council, and I would like to thank you all for having us here today. I'm 28 years old. I am very focused on bringing this entire city and community as a whole together. A few of the things that I'm interested most in is, one, making sure that everyone in our local area becomes civically engaged. I think it's important for us to not have silos within our community, but for everyone to truly feel as if they are a part of this community, be involved in the decision-making process, and also know that when they have a decision or when there is a decision that needs to be made, that their voice and their opinion will indeed matter. That's something that I am very, very focused on. In addition to that, I'm a teacher by trade, so of course education is something that is near and dear to my heart. I've been at Albemarle High School now for 5 years. I teach computer science as well as African American studies, and one of the things that I see so often while I've been running my nonprofit organization, Hype, Helping Young People Evolve, in which we've had a raise in our cumulative GPA from 1.8 to 3.2 in about 3 years. One of the things that I've truly seen with our young people is that in order for them to be successful, they need to know that there are people who have their back. And I want to bring those same values and that same core message to our constituents here in the city and future working with our partners in the county, that when I say something, when council says something, you can A, know that it will be truthful. Secondly, that we will always be transparent. And lastly, that we're going to make decisions that are in the best, that are the best decisions possible for our constituents. Everything that we do will not always be right. I can pretty much attest to that now. I can tell you that everything that we do, you all will not always agree with. But what we will do, you will know that we are transparent. You will know where we're coming from. And when we make these decisions, you will know exactly why we made them. Our lives, and essentially, once you become on council, or hopefully if elected, we know that you're an open book. I have no problem with talking to anyone at any time. I want to be completely transparent at all times. I want us to start working together. So if you're looking for an individual who's focused on making sure that our kids are the best possible kids that they can be and growing to productive citizens within our community, then I need you to vote for me. If you're looking for an individual who's working towards making sure that our community is close-knit and we move towards one community, no matter who you are or where you live, then I need you to vote for me. But most importantly, if you want an individual who's willing to make a change and do something to lead our city forward, then I need you to come out and vote for me in November. Thank you.
And next, Scott Bandy.
Ladies and gentlemen, guests of the Senior Statesman of Virginia, I'm sure sentiment with the time limit is shared, so I'll try not to amble and dally beyond your tolerance. So that this chance doesn't slip away, www.bandyforcivilcouncil.wordpress.com. If you need that address again, the Senior Statesman hopefully will provide a recorded podcast of this event. Question: are we willing to let go of the torch to pass? I ask this question because it pulls together what I hope to touch on and impress among you today. To correct a Charlottesville Tomorrow report first in June, I am running as a libertarian for council. A libertarian reluctantly mislabeled and filed away under independent. A dark horse candidate that irredeemable corruption corners of power would prefer a little less involved. The torch of liberty is recognized as a symbol by willing libertarians to be recognized and acknowledged as so much so that love for and principle of liberty is a challenge for being a political party itself. My home is in libertarianism itself, and its foundation is in mutual respect and unobligating shared providence. There's an idiom that says, sunlight is the best disinfectant. The torch I see as representative of libertarian is held not just during daylight hours, but even in the recess of moonless nights. The libertarian torch is held at all times because vigilance does not take a full rest or get a reset. The people on this stage are here to talk about tomorrow and, if time permits, local government. Maybe also a word said about the traffic light needed outside the center here as well, and the transformation of West Main Street. Now, I return to the question my remarks started with. Are we willing to let go of the torch to pass? In the light of wants for not words, not promises, not failure, the rest of the world don't stop for time. We must be aware of what we pass off to our future.
And now Kathy Galvin.
Well, thank you, Chris, and thank you, everybody, for this incredibly beautiful day. It's a nice, refreshing break from the hot, humid weather we've been having the last few days, and I think it's getting us a good, fresh start in this race to the November 3rd. I am Kathy Galvin, and I am currently on City Council. I have been completing my first term on council. Prior to that, I was on the Charlottesville City School Board. I am an architect by profession. I have been a practicing architect since 1986. And I have been in Charlottesville for 32 years. Of those 32 years, I've been happily married to Mike Costanzo, my husband, 28 years, and we have two sons, Patrick and Kevin. We have lived in Charlottesville that entire time. Both sons went K through 12, Charlottesville City Schools. We are invested in this community. We love this community. As an architect, I do have to bring people together to collaborate to get anything done. I believe that that is a skill that I have brought to council. It is also something that's a blessing and a curse. I do see everything in a very complex, interconnected network. So there is no one single issue that you have to look at when you're solving any one problem. I also am blessed with two parents, both passed away, but they are were members of the Great Generation, both World War II veterans. August 15 is VJ Day, Victory Over Japan Day. My father served in the Pacific. It's something that is near and dear to my heart, and I hope that we all acknowledge that in some way. So Why would I want to run for council again? And better yet, why would you want me to run again and be on council for another 4 years? Number one, I must say I'm extremely excited by the two gentlemen, Mr. Bellamy and Mr. Signer, that have won the Democratic primary with me. I think we will be a very, very good team. We're already working together as a team. And as Mr. Bellamy has said, community engagement is a very important piece. It's been an important piece for me ever since I started council. And it's all part of what I call good government. We can't have a transparent, accountable government unless we do have an engaged population, and it's an engaged and informed dialogue. One of the most sacred duties of government is to do justice impartially to all of its citizens. That's Thomas Jefferson. It's inscribed on the juvenile court. I read it every day I go by. And it's something that I swore an oath of office to uphold. That is a very challenging job to do justice impartially. It means that you have to say no at times when it is completely illegal to do something that a group of people want to do. You have to uphold the rights of the individual and against the general population at times. But you also have to have an eye on the vision. And one of those visions is about West Main Street, a multimodal community that is safe and attractive for all users from 8 to 80.
And now Anton Parker.
Just a quick show of hands. Hi, I'm Anton Parker. Nice to meet you guys. Who all has a smartphone? Cool. If you want to see what I'm really working on, go to your iStore or Google Play Store and check out Seaville Council. There's a frog. And that's that will show you what I'm working on. But let me get back to it. I'm originally from Lexington, Virginia. I've been in Charlottesville for about 19 years. Since moving here, to go to UVA, I've been in six different neighborhoods. We recently bought a house in Fifeville and love it there. I've participated in a lot of nonprofit groups, the Neighborhood Leadership Institute, Computers for Kids, Charlottesville Albemarle Robotics is a great group, Community Bikes, back to when it was Yellow Bikes. Here in Charlottesville, I've worked in neuropharmacology. I've worked as a server at Southern Culture and Dirty Nellies, if you remember those places. I've worked for Shelter and Associates as a builder, a pipe layer at Faulkner Construction, woodworker at Gaston & Wyatt. I teach web development at PVCC, and I'm a full-time web developer at UVA. Having been in web development for 18 years, I have a unique perspective on what transparency means. It's what I do for a living. And having been in this area for many generations, I have a lot of respect for the heritage of this region. The things that I'm really excited about are getting these web tools available and making it so that people can analyze our budgets 24/7 online. We need 100% transparency, and I'm actually building it. This is something I'm giving to the city. I don't charge for any of my work. These are all free downloads. And I think it's something that, you know, regardless, you check out. It's an exciting time. You know, if you need a pothole repaired, this is where it gets interesting. If you need a pothole, this is how it relates to you. You need a pothole repaired. You need a light replaced. You should be able to go online and schedule that. You should be able to make a phone call and schedule that. All of this work should be traceable online at all times. And this is something I'm working to build for you guys. I really hope you're willing to check it out. You know, the other thing, I am a fiscal conservative, and recently Charlottesville has enacted a lot of taxes. We've got a rainwater tax. I don't know where that money goes. I don't know that anyone knows exactly where that money goes. We also have a meal tax. That's really kind of hurting a lot of our small businesses. Making these taxes directly accountable from start to finish is really important, and it's something that I'm going to build for you guys. You know, if elected. If not elected, I'm still going to work on this. I really look forward to working with the rest of the people up here and hope that we're able to communicate on that technical level. Thank you very much for your time.
And our final opening statement will come from Mike Signer.
Hi, everyone. I'm Mike Signer. I'm another one of the candidates for City Council, one of the three Democratic nominees. I share the enthusiasm of Kathy and Wes for the ticket that came out of the primary this June, and I'm really looking forward to working with this community if we're lucky enough to win. I wanted to recognize two of our colleagues who are here, Bob Fenwick, current counselor, is in the audience, and Lena Seville, who's an activist and the president of the Belmont Association, who ran a very spirited campaign with us in the spring also. So, just a quick note of introduction on both personal and professional fronts. Professionally, I'm an attorney and an author. The attorney part is how I make a living and pay my bills. It's a little hard to make a living off of what I do with, I'm a writer and a teacher also, but my attorney, my practice is I do corporate and regulatory law. I previously worked as counsel to Mark Warner when he was governor. I work with startup companies in town, and I also do some pro bono work with people trying to get businesses off the ground with groups like the Community Investment Collaborative. I went to UVA for law school. And I've also been a voting rights attorney for over a decade with the Democratic Party. The writing and teaching part, I'm a lecturer in UVA's politics department. I have my second book came out this spring called Becoming Madison, which is a biography of Madison when he was in his early years. If you haven't heard of it, like I said, it's hard to make a living doing this kind of thing. But I do. This is part of my passions. I care a great deal about ideas and history and learning and teaching. As part of what I, you know, want to do on the planet. And personally, I am the, most importantly, I'm the father, a new father, which will probably bring all kinds of, you know, perspectives to what I'm going to do on council. I have twin 10-month-old boys with my wife, Emily Blout. My parents, my mom, who's with us now taking care of the kids as we speak, was the president of the Virginia National Organization for Women, which will tell you a lot about where I come from. When I tell a story, when I turned 30, she gave me an envelope as my birthday present, and I'm, oh, great, this will be a gift certificate or some cash or something, and I open up, and it's a membership card of the Virginia National Organization for Women. So the reason that I ran for council, I love this community deeply. I've loved it ever since elementary school when I started spending time here in these enrichment programs that they did for Virginia public school students, or all students. The idea of the campaign was One Charlottesville. So that, to me, means that at every step of the way in making decisions on council, I want to think about what is the answer. What is the answer for the common good of Charlottesville? What unites us? Not just what's the answer where two interest groups are going to fight or battle it out or somebody has a louder voice, but really what is the answer for One Charlottesville? That to me is also going to involve listening. It's going to involve trying to unite and trying to find common ground between all kinds of people in Charlottesville. And the four issues that I want to work on the most are economic opportunity and job creation, quality of life in our neighborhoods and the natural environment, public safety and expanding community policing, and of course strengthening our public schools. So I'm eager to talk about all those with you tonight, or this afternoon.
Well, thank you. As a collective group, you've done a good job of managing to avoid the red light district here that we have over here, not far from the senior statesman gentleman. All right, now on this round, I'm going to pose a question to all five of you. I hope to get a response within 90 seconds to 2 minutes tops, because I'm trying to get as many questions in during the portion of the session that involves the city council candidates. I'm going to start with Scott. We'll go Scott, Kathy, down the road, and we'll wind up around with Wes this time. And this question, Satyendra Hooja, who's the most senior member of the current city council, even before he got on there, the council, back in the middle of the last decade, decided they were going to have the city grow up, as well as we were going to have a more dense city to live in. They made a bunch of decisions. Unfortunately, a recession came along in 2007, 2008. There were a lot of plans that developers had for making the city go up, but they were on hold. They were both frozen for several years. Now, within the last year or so, they've been coming to pass. In the next phase, how would you like to see land use and development happen in Charlottesville, especially when it comes to our entrance corridors? And I'll start with Scott, and we'll go down the line.
Well, to start, I think that our current council has done what they could to the best of their ability. I don't hold my breath. I think a little bit too much attention has been given air corridors. But on the other hand, you can't be vigilant enough. Kathy Galvin herself said that she was not exactly pleased with the entire results of the West Flats on West Main Street. West Main Street, oh, is that a can of worms that's gotten open? Now, the next council meeting, they're going to be voting on potentially the total rehabilitation of that street. Thank you, Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Committee. Now, I kind of am inclined with our outgoing mayor to leave this alone. It would be nice to accommodate by at least two parking rides. If we continue growing upward, we need to accommodate the potential vehicles, especially coming from students that are attending the University of Virginia. Now,
all right, Kathy.
Okay. Thank you very much for giving us the background, Chris. So let's see. Where do we move forward from here, given that we are now seeing the fruits of our labor from the last two decades? 20 years ago, the city was in dire financial straits. That is why they were very desperately trying to make sure they were getting the most out of their redevelopment options in the city. Lots of older, auto-oriented establishments, lots of broken parking lots. On many of our corridors, they became known as growth corridors. That was from 2000. So here we are 15 years later, and yes, we did start seeing the magic rocks grow up, as you will, because the recession is over. I think West Main Street is actually a really good success story, because we had a lot of handle in this of initiating a study of West Main Street that gave us recommendations to change the zoning on West Main Street. You have to be very legal and comprehensive when you change the zoning. You can't change it on a piecemeal basis. So what we did is we had a process for the entire district. The public weighed in, and last April I put forth a resolution to initiate a rezoning. June, council passed the rezoning of West Main Street so that east of the Drury Brown Bridge, the maximum story height will be 4 stories, not 6. So I think that's a success story, where we brought people together in a concerted way, intentionally, to understand how we can both grow the city in a way that was commensurate with the people's values without undermining the definite need to pay for the services that we all want through development. Otherwise, your taxes do go up.
Anton Parker.
Well, having been here for a little while, a lot of the growth that I'm seeing isn't something I'm very excited about. I mean, the Landmark Hotel is certainly a landmark. The flats are kind of a flat line. I mean, I live where I can see the backside of that, and it's the backside of that. It's not, I don't want to sound too critical, but a few more hotels is not what we need. We really need to start providing jobs that are good jobs. I mean, saying it creates jobs indirectly, directly it makes some really not very good jobs. And then you've got all these wonderful small businesses, O's Shoes, Sidekick with Ben Calhoun, Relay Foods, Koshex, Elder Research. I mean, these are 50, 60 people businesses here in Charlottesville that pay very well. And that's something we should be excited about, and to train people and give people skills that they can use later on in life. I really hope that we would focus on creating more businesses and fostering an environment where those businesses can thrive. Having better transparency is essential for this. You need to be able to go online, fill out the forms online. Right now it's a bunch of PDFs. It's a process that's kind of mired and obscured. We really need to fix that.
And Mike Signer.
So I live a block off of West Main Street in a house I bought 10 years ago. So I've seen a lot of the changes, and I agree with Kathy. 10 years ago, West Main, I mean, you had a lot. Most of the, you had basically car repair businesses that were most of them defunct, and you had a lot of vacancy that was happening. Now it's a much more vigorous scene. So I think that is a sign of good development and infill development. So you have businesses coming into old historical structures. What I think we have to keep in mind with planning is it takes a while. You're planning a decade ahead. So a lot of the changes right now in Charlottesville are a result of some zoning that came in when Maurice Cox was mayor. So this, you know, we can rethink, we can reconsider. That's a privilege of a citizenry, and especially an engaged citizenry. So you have big macro trends that are happening on top of Charlottesville, which we all are amazed by. Millennials don't like cars anymore. People are moving back to the cities. That was not a trend 15 or 20 years ago. So there are kind of, you would call it these secular trends happening amidst all us. Now, the question for elected officials and for the activists who work with us and for professionals like city planners is to think about the variables that you consider when you're making tough decisions, when a developer wants to build a building, when you're thinking about what's going to happen with a big area of town like West Main and the strategic investment area. So the variables that I'm going to look at is what changes. I mean, the thing that I talked about in the primary campaign was keep Charlottesville, Charlottesville. That doesn't mean that you can't make changes, you can't build big, magnificent new buildings, but it means that you look to the character of this particular city in making your decisions. So the ones that I'm going to think about are four. What benefits as many of our people as possible? When I talked about one Charlottesville, this means I'm really trying to think about what's going to be good for the city as a whole when we make development decisions. Number two, the fisc. We've got to think about our money. What comes in as a result of a development, and what goes out? How much does it cost? Number three is our beauty and our history. Does it match our character? Are we proud of it? Do we think, are we going to like how it looks in 20, 30, 50 years? And fourth is the future. How is it going to look? How is it going to serve a changing city and a changing population, especially what if somebody goes bankrupt? What if we need to repurpose the property? That's okay. How I'm going to approach these questions.
Thank you very much, Mike. Now, Wes.
Do you mind repeating the question?
Sure.
Do you mind repeating the question so
everyone can
hear?
Very simple. For the prior councils have decided that the city was going to go up.
Mm-hmm.
It took a while because of the recession for this to happen. Now it's happening. It's happening perhaps on steroids in the view of some people.
Mm-hmm.
The development along West Main Street, where should it go in the next phase?
Right. So I think one of the things that's really important in regards to development in West Main Street is community engagement, I think, is important, but leaders are going to have to make decisions. How we go about doing so is going to be very important. I spend a lot of time at First Baptist Church, which is on West Main. I also spend time up and down the corridor hearing from different people. We've had several different meetings. I've heard counselors and had input from a lot of different people. But when we make these decisions about how it goes moving forward, we have to not only keep the city in mind, and we also have to keep in mind that Charlottesville wasn't intended to be Washington, D.C., or Atlanta, Georgia, or anywhere like that. Now, that doesn't mean that I am anti-development or I am pro-growth or any kind of box in which people try to place you in. I just think that we have to keep the true meaning of this city, this great city, keep it true to what the true intentions were. When I think about First Baptist Church, and I hear from so many people who go to church with me, when they say that they are afraid of a great deal of development on West Main because it may take away the parking, a staple in our community that's been here for over 100 years, when people say that if West Main gets developed and it goes too crazy or it's off the Richter scale, they won't have anywhere to park for church, I have a problem with that. That's very troubling for me. So as a leader and as an individual who's here in the city, I think it's important to balance the engagement and the input from the community with the true vision for the city. I'm not going to sit here and say that I have all of the answers, nor am I going to sit here and say that I want us to start building 20-foot skyscrapers or anything of that nature. What I am willing to say is that I'm looking forward to hearing more input from the city and working in a collegial manner with the rest of our counselors to provide a decision for the city that's going to be best for us moving forward.
Thank you very much. Here's the second of my questions. I'm going to see if we can get this a little quicker answers on this. My second question is about the city's Human Rights Commission. Of course, we just celebrated last year the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act. This year, the 50th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act. Charlottesville has a Human Rights Commission, but so far the staff has not had a whole lot to do. They've got an office. They've got people that are working there, but in terms of a budget item, the output has not been satisfactory to a large number of Charlottesville residents. What should be the function of this Human Rights Commission? What should be its future in the next 4 years? And I'll start with Kathy, and then we'll go down the line.
Thanks again, Chris. The Human Rights Commission, when it was instituted, had three functions to it. It was to provide ongoing dialogue with the community, much like the dialogue on race. It was to do research on kind of systemic problems with prejudice, lack of access based on race or ethnicity. And then it was also a prosecution piece to prosecute claims of discrimination. Admittedly, that latter piece is what people have been focusing on recently, as that has not been demonstrating the volume of complaints as people originally anticipated. But that doesn't mean that those other two pieces aren't critically important, which is the ongoing dialogue that needs to be fostered between all races, all religions, all ethnic groups, and then also the kind of research we need. Case in point, I could see a wonderful opportunity for our Human Rights Commission to work together with members of our Place Design Task Force, for example, to come up with better ways to do engagement, to come up with ways to better understand how we can create integrated neighborhoods. A recent Supreme Court decision said that segregated neighborhoods are once again not legal under the Fair Housing Act. In fact, de facto segregation can be broken up. So I think what we need to do is look at the resource we have and look at ways that we can help our community move into the next century and be a truly inclusive community where we do have racially, ethnically mixed neighborhoods where all children thrive.
Anson Parker.
This is going to get a little technical for just a second, but I think one of the things that's exciting to me is that all the environment, this piece here, when you hand an idea into city council, right, it's important to me that every step of the way that that process is open and transparent, all right? And so Human Rights Commission, they should probably be involved in a lot of decisions, and they probably are, okay, in some way. But it's kind of a black box, much in the same way that the Environmental Council is kind of a black box, much like legal review is kind of a black box, much like city planning is kind of a black box. And so something goes into city council as an idea, or goes into city hall, pardon me, as an idea, it bounces around a whole lot of different places, and you don't know exactly where it's gone, and it comes to city council, where there's a lot of kind of head nodding at the end of the day. It would be really exciting to see how this Human Rights Commission actually participated in decisions on a case-by-case level. And that's something that's not really doable right now because they haven't really implemented the technology. And that's what I'm, hitting the same nail again, but that's what I'm excited about, is making sure that every single step of the way we understand what the different people in City Hall are doing. I really think that'll help us understand the value of these pieces.
Mike Signer.
So I actually want to say, before I get to the question, I think that what Anson is talking about, which is transparency and tracking of citizen requests for what government would do, especially at neighborhood development services, is a good idea. And it's something I talked about in my campaign a lot, because right now that doesn't happen. You can't track over a couple of years what's happening with a particular request. So it's something that I think that we're going to talk about also. On the question of the Human Rights Commission, so first of all, there could probably be no more urgent cause than dealing with our past and present of injustice in Charlottesville, specifically in Charlottesville, and the ongoing purpose of achieving unity and finding common cause and addressing abuses. With that said, I think that I'm going to pose to the Human Rights Commission the same question I'm going to pose to every agency of state government going forward in every budgeting cycle of city government, which is, does it make sense to pay this much for it? I'm going to ask that question of everything, by the way, because we had a budget deficit this last year, so we had to increase taxes. That was a serious decision that the city government made, and I'm not going to take those decisions lightly, especially if you look at the revolts against that kind of thing that's happened in some of other Virginia's localities. I grew up in Arlington County, and you basically have a revolt that's happened there against a pattern of tax increases for city projects over the last several years. So with I was a Tim Kaine appointee to Virginia's Board of Medicine for 4 years. It was very labor-intensive. We disciplined and oversaw all of Virginia's doctors. I didn't get paid a dime for that. I would drive to Richmond, spend a day doing hearings. There's a lot of very important entities that we have that we don't pay for, like the Planning Commission. And I think that we should, you know, the Human Rights Commission has to measure itself against those other volunteer commissions we have in terms of benefit and cost.
Wes Bellamy.
Well, I'll be very candid in regards to the Human Rights Commission. When we look at the price tag in regards to $300,000 for a return in which we've received very little in comparison to how much we paid, I think that definitely shows that we need to do some revamping of the Human Rights Commission as it is currently constructed. I'm not in the business of throwing money at issues just to throw money at them or doing things just to say that we have something on the books. And this is coming from a person who many of these issues affect people who look like me on a very daily basis. However, why I do think that we need the Human Rights Commission is because there is still a large number of people who feel ostracized in our community. That's one of the things that I plan to bring to council, an individual who's willing to roll up his sleeves, work with other counselors, get civically engaged, get back in the community, and work to bring our city together. How do we do that while utilizing the Human Rights Commission? I think the dialogue on race was something that was beautiful for our city. I saw black people, white people, young people, old people, Latino people, people of all across the rainbow talking together and figuring out how do we work through our differences. We need the Human Rights Commission to focus on instances and issues such as the ones that I just addressed. When we look at trying to find different organizations or businesses to kind of do somewhat of a witch hunt, I think we find ourselves getting into problematic areas. When we spend $300,000 once again to get the feedback that we received, it's not a good thing. So we need to revamp it, and I'm looking forward to doing so if you guys elect me in November.
And Scott Bandy.
And how many cases have come before the Human Rights Commission? Backtrack a little bit. Yeah, I definitely got trumped on that two parking garage thing, but moving aside, at least First Baptist deserves it to keep its parking. You don't fix something that isn't broke. But then on the other hand, it's insanity to keep paying for something that isn't addressing cases. Yes, the dialogue on race was needed. It's still needed. It needs to be maintained. Vigilance, folks. Look what's going on 1 year today. 1 year in Ferguson. That mess is still going on. It's simple, folks. We just need to be able to talk to each other. Connectivity. It's in our Vision 2025.
All right. We've got our Albemarle Supervisors candidates, who, of course, are waiting in the wings anxiously to join us. I want to take one question from somebody in the audience. We'll use the card system in the next phase. But for this, does some city resident have a question that they'd like to pose to each of our five candidates? And this is definitely going to be the last question for the five city council candidates. Any city resident? Just raise your hand. Or are we a largely Albemarle group here? All right, Sue Lewis, former member of the former chair of the Charlottesville Planning Commission and the current member of the City Human Rights Commission.
Yes, and that's what I'd like to say something about. I cannot speak for the commission because I am not either the president or the director currently. But I would love to talk to all five of you afterwards, kind of off the record, about the Human Rights Commission.
Well, I don't hear a question in that.
Look forward to that.
But I'll let you guys talk to you. And we've just arrived at 2:15.
Can we have a question?
No?
No? I have a question. I would like to hear a question, even if you live in the county. That's what this is about. Let's get a question, please.
All right. This lady right here.
Well, Being the CEO of Java, I think you all can guess what my question might be. As you think about perhaps one thing, because I know we're near the end of the time, that you could do to help facilitate Charlottesville's continuing move toward being an age-friendly community, I think for the senior statesman, that would be a good thing to address.
Yay. Thank you. All right, and we'll start with Anson on this one.
I think that's a really exciting point. One of the things that I've already had some success with is working with retirees who came together to analyze parts of the city budget. And it was really an exciting time because we were able to go through, look at some data streams that we had to FOIA. Unfortunately, it was, you know, the FOIA system in Charlottesville is really bad, unfortunately. We don't really have much of one. It's very time consuming. Well, it's just very time consuming. It's not very efficiently done. But what we did was we manually processed data. And this is one of the things that was really exciting. We had retirees who were able, you know, who were very knowledgeable and actually fairly technically savvy. I mean, this is a fairly bright community, as we all know. And so we were able to do some really exciting work, understanding a little bit more about how our budgets were working. So I think working with the senior community is kind of it's a win-win. I mean, they are often older engineers, older, you know, people who have done a whole lot and understand budgets, understand the data, and can really provide some enlightenment to the rest of the community.
And Mike Signer.
I mean, we've met about this. Thanks for the question. I think that the issue of aging Charlottesvillians touches all of us because with the aging boomer population, I have aging parents. I mean, and I think that we ought to. What's the one thing? I think the one thing is we ought to put them in almost every conversation we have about the city because they're wonderful for a community. They bring wisdom and they go to restaurants and they, it's a wonderful character to bring, and we do get infatuated with young people or young workers, and it's too easy to see that as a zero sum with older, and that means that goes to everything from mentoring programs to mobility to vulnerable to income challenges to housing challenges, and I think it should be part of the long-term planning and decision making that people who set the policy for the city like us are doing every day.
Wes Bellamy.
What? To answer your question, what can we specifically bring to sources or places like Java? I think that I bring a sense of collaboration. Since I've been in Charlottesville, I've worked diligently to bring together the entire community in several different capacities through several different efforts. And I think there are still a large population of people who don't know about Java, who don't know about some of the resources available for our older, or I like to call you all seasoned, population. So being able to connect the individuals who don't know with the resources that are available, that's where I see myself, a conduit of sorts. And I look forward to doing so if you all come out and vote for me on November 3rd.
Scott Bandy.
I just want to mention a trend. Now, take this for what it's worth. As we progress along and as technology advances even further than what we can imagine, more retirees are coming back into the employment field. It is their expertise. Our senior citizens and those of seasoned age, their expertise is being called on. So why would we want to totally write off or brush off a resource as that? Let's stand up for our senior citizens and their aged citizens. Let's do what we can.
And with the last word at this forum for the senior council candidates, Kathy Gell.
And also, I must say, I'm the seasoned candidate at the age of 59. So having said that, making our city as walkable as possible for everyone and getting people living close to where they live, where they work and where they play, where they like to be entertained, where they like to learn. Interestingly enough, the Flats is not being filled up with students. It's being filled up with people who are like me and older. It's an interesting phenomenon. People want to be where they can walk to restaurants. And interestingly enough, more small grocery stores are coming to Charlottesville. You're seeing it on Preston Avenue. You're seeing it already on West Main Street. So in response to this seasoned citizen, we are getting a revitalization of our urban areas, and I welcome that. And I think the one thing that we can learn from JABA is the co-location of putting our very young with our older citizens. And as we, my colleagues in the Democratic Party, are very committed to seeing the redevelopment of our public housing community and other areas of our city in a manner that does provide for opportunities to co-locate high-quality early childhood care with community facilities and residential facilities that house multiple ages. I think that would be a great way to continue the culture in a very positive direction.
Thank you, all five candidates. We packed a lot into a 45, 50-minute span. We're going to have, since we have school opening a week from today, we're going to have a little recess here while we change partners, and the candidates for the Board of Supervisor seats will come up here and take your places. And November 3rd, of course, for both jurisdictions, November 3rd, City Council elections. And all these folks are on the council. All right. We're ready to start the second phase of this. Because we know that most of the people who are in this room are Albemarle County residents, we're going to have, yes, you're applauding being Albemarle County residents. Well, thank you, Ann. We're going to have some cards that you can fill out if you have questions for the candidates after going through the same period where we ask questions of the, have the candidates make their opening statements, then I'll pose a question to the candidates. Okay, basically, we're going to have cards, which Madison, there in his Jimmy Buffett shirt, will pass out to you if you want to fill out a card, and Terry Cooper, who's up here in the front, the man with the light blue shirt. They'll pass out cards. Since most of the folks here are Albemarle residents, we knew most of the questions would come from Albemarle people, these Albemarle candidates. We're now going to hear from the first from the three Rivanna District candidates. The Rivanna District candidates, Norman Dill, Lawrence Gaughan, Richard Lloyd. We'll start alphabetically with Mr. Dill, then Mr. Gaughan, then Mr. Lloyd, and we'll have an opening statement from each of the three of them. Yes, we have the high-tech box for them, just like we had for city council candidates.
What does that mean?
Well, that's green, red, yellow.
Oh, I said right.
The,
it's green for 2 minutes, yeah. Yellow for 1 minute, and then there's a big red.
Yeah, big red. And we do not penalize those who are big red. Okay, all right, there we go. All right.
Okay. I'm Norman Dill, Democratic candidate for the Board of Supervisors from Albemarle County from the Rivanna District. I have quite a few things I'd like to say, so excuse me, but I have some notes that I want to refer to, too. I'm at a time in my life when I want to give back. I've been a resident here for over 30 years, and I've made it my permanent home. I've lived in Ashcroft for the last 8 years and in Ivy for all the rest of the years. I've had several businesses, Rebecca's Natural Food and the Barracks Road Shopping Center, named after my daughter, Harlow Powell Auctions. I was the co-owner for about 10 years, one of the leading auction houses in the state of Virginia. I learned most of what I know about management growing up in a family business. My father and three older brothers had a chain of lumber yards in New York and Connecticut. I also went to Harvard Business School, got my MBA, studied strategic planning and finance. I want to boost our economy by promoting local entrepreneurs, entrepreneurs that share our community values. The county can encourage businesses in a variety of ways. There may be a discovery by a UVA researcher or some other innovative person. We have the that we stumble over the name, the Small Business Development Center and the Community Investment Collaborative that offer mentors to new businesses. There's lots of opportunities in Charlottesville to start new businesses. We could do more with our local private equity funds. There's a lot of people who have money invested in private equity funds that live in the Charlottesville-Albemarle area, but invest all over the world. I've talked to several people who think we could redirect some of that here to the city and county. I'm passionate about preserving our environment in our rural areas. New young farmers, if they farm responsibly and profitably, help the environment and they help the rural economy. I'm currently working with local growers. I'm the vice president of Virginia Foodworks. We're helping farmers package their food. So if a strawberry farmer has an acre of strawberries, he doesn't have to sell them all at the city market. He can turn them into strawberry jam and sell them year-round and actually make a living doing it. We've had a lot of success with that. On the environment, most of the Rivanna River is in the watershed of the Rivanna River is in Albemarle County. It's all in the city, too. But there's 2,400 miles of streams in Albemarle County, and more than half of them are impaired, according to the Virginia Department of Environmental Quality. This is just a core natural resource that we need to preserve, our water. Clean water, healthy soil, quality of life. We need to protect our natural resources. It all works together, our economy, the quality of life. We need to preserve the land, the soil. I care deeply about our public schools. My five children all went to Albemarle County Public Schools. I know how important good teachers can be. Okay? We need to figure out the capital improvements that are needed at the schools. A supervisor makes important decisions every day about issues big and small. I promise to work as your guardian to protect the health and natural beauty of our land, the vibrancy of our economy, and the quality of our education. Thank you. Barnes gone.
Yes. Hi, I want to thank our sponsors. I want to also point out that I would have had the opportunity of appearing here for a congressional forum last year. However, my opponent at that time would not stand up next to me and answer to his record in Washington. So I'm particularly and especially honored to be here today. I want to start by saying something that I say to every voter when I knock on their door, and that is that I am the only candidate born and raised here in Albemarle County running for this seat in many years, and particularly this year. I am also an independent in the truest sense of the word, meaning that I will answer to the people, not to a political party. I will answer to the people. There are no Democratic or Republican solutions to problems such as how to fund our schools so that we reward our teachers for their hard work and dedication. There is no partisan solution to protecting our most precious and vital and valuable resources that Norman just talked about. There is no need for partisanship when it comes to saving lives if a child has been in a car accident. There is no partisan solution that a party can answer to putting out fires or enforcing the law in our county. So rather than letting some small party committee that's run by the likes of Cindy Burkett or Richard Brewer pick these candidates and send them on the way to being in an ivory tower, I am offering the Rivanna voters something that they want and something that they frankly deserve, which is an independent to run for this office. Now, if the voters come out in favor of business as usual and they pick one of these two partisan candidates, then that's their prerogative, but let's let the voters decide this in November. I would also like to take this opportunity to issue a statement about an incident that occurred in my neighborhood on Sunday night, August 9th, between 8 and 10 p.m., someone made the grave mistake of trespassing on at least two people's private property in my community and vandalizing some of my signs, which constitutes at least one felony. Now, the incident was reported to the Albemarle County Police. The owners of this private property owners have installed surveillance cameras, and they are armed and they are prepared to protect their property lawfully against any further criminal violations to their property or to my signs. Now, tearing up my signs does not discourage me from running. In fact, it reinforces my resolve to reach out to as many voters as possible with my message. And my message is participation. I'm going to continue to carry this message of civic engagement because this election is not about me. It is about Ravenna District voters. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be amongst the people of Albemarle County. I want to thank Peter Thompson, the head of the Senior Center, and Bob McGrath, the senior statesman head, the president. These are important conversations. This is when we get in front and talk about the issues. But it's only more important that we are able, as part of the rights of being a citizen in the United States, to sit down and have a bipartisan debate, to bring the issues forward, to listen to the people, to talk to our opponents, and have multiple of different opinions on different topics. This is the way we distill what's the right path to take. This is the way we have the community involved in the process. And I really thank each and every one of you for participating and coming here year after year and making this place a better environment. We live in a gorgeous environment. It's really drop-dead gorgeous here. And I think this is a real commitment that I have, and I hope that I know that everybody has, to protecting that environment and our way of life. The only way we're going to do that is to have the community participation and input. So I pledge to you that I am running as a Republican, but I'm really running to represent the people, all the people, not just the Republicans, not just the Democrats or the Independents. We need good development. We don't need shoddy workmanship. We need thoughtful development. We need to have people who will sit down and come up with the building codes, come up with the places 29 or the new density levels. Are they good or are they bad? The only way we're going to determine that is to really sit down and talk to each other and decide what we want to create from what God has given us. We need the development areas. We also need the rural areas. And the rural areas are where it all happens. That's where our resources to run this community come from. I don't mean literally. I mean, you know, most of them come from outside of this community, but the beauty of this area comes really from the rural areas. So I think it's a time for us all to look at each other and drop all of these R's and D's and independents and get about the business of creating a model city that the community is proud of and that the world looks to for good ideas and a good way to develop a city. That doesn't mean that we pave it over. That only means that we work on our practices and our policies and come up with good, solid legislation and practice. Thank you very much.
And now, having heard from Mr. Gill, Mr. Vaughn, and Mr. Lloyd from the Ravenna District, we'll now hear from the two Scottsville District candidates. First, Richard Randolph.
I'd first like to start off by thanking you, Chris, for being here this afternoon. And I'd like to thank the Senior Center and Senior Statesmen. If I'm elected the Scottsville District Supervisor on November 3rd, I'll have the unique honor of automatically becoming the most senior member of the Board of Supervisors or of the City Council, despite Kathy Galvin's proposal that she was the oldest, and the only current member, to my knowledge, to have served in the Armed Forces. I'm proud to say I was in the same division as my father, the 28th Division, known by the Wehrmacht as the Bloody Bucket, because the 28th patch was a red keystone, symbolic of the Keystone State of Pennsylvania, where the division was based and I was born. My father gained three things from his participation in World War II, a Bronze Star at the Battle of the Bulge, severe PTSD that no one recognized as such, and a profound dislike for bull in all its manifestations. My father passed in 1998. So senior issues for me today are not about other people or another generation, as it has always been in my life. Senior issues are now not just about my customers whom I assist with home maintenance projects as they age in their homes, but about my generation, about my older brother, my cousins, about my friends, and even about some of my cycling buddies. At one time, to be a senior meant to me my great Aunt Anna, whom I met as a child. Then seniors meant my grandparents, especially my grandmother, Hope Randolph, who became the primary person in my life following my mother's premature death when I was 22 years old. My father and his sister, also named Hope, and my in-laws then became guides in my life, with Susan's mom, Joan Jones, fortunately still very much with us at age 89, now out in Santa Fe in true senior center fashion, enjoying a new opera each day. A senior presence in my life has always been there to provide me with guidance, perspective, unconditional love, and emotional support. It's hard for me to emotionally accept that the day will yet be here when that support system I have relied on and benefited from all my life will no longer be part of my bloodline. I recognize I will just need to make more friends with more seniors, as I have already done through my home services business and through my wife's and my acquaintance. So if anyone 75 out there would like to join me for a bike ride this weekend, please let me know. Now let me address my philosophy on aging a second. Broadcasting from London during the Blitz in 1941, the incomparable Edward R. Murrow told his comfortable American audience that, quote, "It's difficult to explain the meaning of cold to people who are warm, the meaning of privation to people who have wanted for luxuries. It's almost impossible to substitute intelligence for experience." To paraphrase Murrow, I would submit it remains a challenge today to explain the meaning of old to those who are young, the consequences of deprivation that those whose wants are met, and the value of compassion for those living without the comforts others know and take for granted in an age where actual and metaphoric walls are presented as long-term solutions to the challenges of our time. Thank you.
And Earl Smith.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Earl Smith. I am born and raised here, born in Martha Jefferson Hospital back in 1964. My father was a police officer and retired from the telephone company for over 40 years. My mother was a nurse, and I've had a great upbringing here in Charlottesville. I lived in Charlottesville till I was 12, and then I moved to the county in 1976, the year of the bicentennial. I remember that greatly. But just to let you folks know just where I'm at, I'm a very down-to-earth, common-sense guy. Rick Randolph and I have met once, and we always talk, and we talk about situations. We both agreed that this is not about a race about Democrats and Republicans. It's about what we can do to make Albemarle better. We have both agreed to that. We have both agreed to help each other even after the election. So I'm in this for the long haul. I was a key and an element of the city council folks. We're talking about Mayor Cox and Hooja, and back in I think it was 2005. I was one of the key instrumental people to get that growth area brought about, because that's when, I don't know if any of you guys remember, that's when they wanted to build a 4-story building in the middle of Preston Avenue and Grady, and I just had purchased where the McGrady's Bar is. It used to be the Firehouse Bar and Grill. Kevin and I, from the guy from Central Battery, we went in front of City Council every meeting in about a year, and we fussed and we brought about things that we said, why are you tearing up a street? You have all these places that I know. I grew up here. That place has been empty for 20 years. Why are you spending taxpayers' money and tearing up a street? Why don't you go to those business owners and ask them and find ways to work with them? And that's what's happened now. Now, you're talking, that's back in 2002, and now they're talking in 2015. It's coming about. That's a long time for an investment to come for there, to me. I think the process is too slow, and that's because of the transparency's not there. And I think these people use transparency as a word just to appease you guys. I don't think that they are really truly transparent. Again, I'm not going to take up any more time. You guys kind of know who I am. I'm a native of Charlottesville. We call ourselves the Townies, and I'm here to, I'll tell you what, I want the best government that reasonable taxation can buy. So that's where I'll end that. Thank you.
My first question for all five of you candidates has to do with transportation. Some of you probably got over here to the senior center via the new John W. Warner Parkway. As many of you probably know, that road and its incarnation is the Meadow Creek Parkway. It was first proposed in May 1967. It finally opened this year. That's roughly 47 and a half years. We have a road project up the road at the intersection of 29 and Rio, which this governor says he will have done by October 2017, which is a month before Virginians elect their next governor. Do you think that's this project that's planned for up here is going to be done in time? And do you think that's a wise use of taxpayer money? And I'll start with Mr. Gaughan, and we'll go down the line. Let's try for 90 seconds on this.
Okay, again, the only candidate who is born and raised here, I have seen the beginning, the before, the during, and the after of really out-of-control, unruly growth. And there are solutions, but they're not being presented by the past boards. They're not being presented by either parties. So we need some real change on the county board. And that's what I'm offering. Again, I'm offering Ravenna District voters something that they have sorely lacked, which is a native, born and raised here, and an independent. And I will address that by saying, I don't think it'll happen. I don't think it'll be done. To answer your question, no, I don't think they'll succeed. I was born in 1966 in Martha Jefferson Hospital, just 5 short months before that proposal was put forth for the what we see now as the part of the parkway there. I'll just say about 29. I have a broad proposal, and I'm going to put it up on my website soon when I develop it more thoroughly, but just broadly speaking, we need a bypass, a western bypass extension, but I would also support some grade-separated interchanges around Rio and around Hydraulic as well. We need both. It is disgusting to me to drive down parts of 29 where it's 4, 5, sometimes 5 lanes on either side. That's more than the 495 Beltway in Washington, D.C. It is just not acceptable to me. We've got to do something different, and it begins with electing an independent who is a native who wants to see our heritage preserved here. Thank you.
Richard Lloyd.
Let's see. I'm from Albemarle County also. That doesn't really qualify me for anything but being in love with the county. So I went and have a mechanical engineering degree and a civil engineering degree, and I look at the traffic program kind of from a start from way up, a macro view. We had a debate, not a debate, but a real talking to, where they brought in Ian Lockwood, who is a really world-renowned traffic planner. And he had a question, and it was given through other people. He didn't ask it direct. But the question was, why do we have a through traffic solution to a local traffic problem? And he pointed out that 90% of the traffic going up and down 29 through our business area is local. It's not through traffic. So why do we want a through traffic solution? And why are we using plans that were developed back when I was born? Why don't we put together a community, city, county, regional traffic study and find out what we want to do with the traffic in this county? What do we expect the traffic to be? Ian Lockwood brought up the fact that the problem with shopping centers is you can't drive through them. If you look at Rio Road, there's a shopping center on your right, shopping center on your left. It kind of funnels the traffic right into the intersection. And on the other side, it's not much better. So his proposal at that time is far too long to go through in 90 seconds, and the red light's already on. But that kind of philosophy of backing up and coming up with a regional study to come up with a regional solution to our local problem. We do need a bypass. At this time, I think we need to know how big it is and where it should go and who's going to use it. Thank you very much.
Richard Randolph.
So far as I know, Route 29 does not go into the Scottsville district at this time.
It does not, but the taxpayers.
It may be redirected. May be redirected in the future, yes. But I will answer it. I'm just making a joke here.
I'm laughing.
The couple of things to be said about transportation. Certainly, I've worked on this as a member of the Planning Commission for 3.5 years, and one of the things we advocated in the new comp plan is to ensure that there would be a multimodal approach that Kathy Galvin referenced at the end to ensure that seniors are going to be able to walk on sidewalks and also be able to bicycle if they care to shopping areas. And despite what Mr. Lloyd said, the most attractive areas in the county are in the rural area. Those of that live in planned residential developments would make an argument that we like our homes just fine where they are in more concentrated neighborhoods. And by the way, also the Planning Commission and the county work on zoning codes, so that's something that is very much part of our fabric. But looking at roads, Route 250, some people have argued that it should be widened on the east side, but realistically the funds aren't there. There's $31 million in the Culpeper budget right now for VDOT for rural roads, and or actually for road improvements in the whole district. The chances of any of that coming to Albemarle following Solutions 29 are slim. I also work actively with people on Avon Street Extended on a corridor study to try to improve their neighborhood so that they can get safely across the street to Cale Elementary School and also shop. So roads are very much a topic of importance in the Scottsville District.
Earl Smith.
I'm just going to say, why keep bringing back up something that's already been passed and it's going to happen? Was I opposed to it? I thought it was the dumbest thing that I ever saw in my life. I want to say, and it has no reflection on anybody or any person making a decision, but I remember back in 94, 95, 96, I worked for Miss Utility. I relocated all those utilities. They're getting ready to relocate again. Okay, so 20 years ago, we had an engineer tell us that what we have now is the greatest be-all, do-all. It's going to fix everything, right? Now, 20 years later, we're spending $235 million. I guess we got a do-over that's going to cost us a lot of money. I say move on with it. I think the biggest issue about transportation in Albemarle County and Charlottesville and is the way that the planning, Rick Randolph and I talked about this a little bit, it's the planning and placement of buildings and the infrastructure of the businesses around here. They just slammed up stuff at Stonefield. That, again, was nobody's fault about doing something. They just didn't listen. They don't think about common sense stuff. Why didn't they make it more like the Walk Mall? You know, why didn't they make it where it's easier? I have a Chevy truck. I can't drive down one of those streets. You know, can any of you guys? That's just plain and simple. So that's how I think. Let's just move on from it and deal with it and make the best of it and get through this situation. Thank you.
And Norman Dill.
Of course, we can't talk too much about all the traffic issues in 90 seconds, but just a couple quick key points about whether that's going to be finished or not. There's a $10 million bonus to the contractor to get it finished for the football game next year, I guess. So I think they're probably going to get the job done. I think we need to concern ourselves with the retailers that are along there in the meantime to make sure that they don't just get shut out completely. 29 North is the major north-south road. If we're trying to protect the rural areas, if we're trying to keep people off the city streets, which go every which way, 29 North is where we have to keep directing traffic. So I think, you know, as Earl says, you know, we've been studying this. I looked at plans going back to 1981 about what's happening on with the bypass, with doing some of the interchanges that we're talking about now, and it has been studied extremely thoroughly. I think that it's going to be a lot better once we get this construction done and then finish Hillsdale Drive and make the two-lane by Best Buy, make that a two-lane exit will help the traffic tremendously. So I'm hoping within, you know, 2 years from now, everything will be completely done, shorter than that, hopefully, and we'll really be having good traffic on 29, which is where it should be.
I've got one more question that I'm going to pose to each of the candidates, and then I'm going to gather the cards that Madison Cummings and Terry Cooper have been. Well, so if you want to fill out a card, you can either hand them to Mr. Cummings over there in the Jimmy Buffett shirt or Mr. Cooper over here in the light blue shirt. You're wasting away here in Margaritaville, so let's start with Richard Lloyd. The next question that I'm going to ask for all five of the candidates up here is about merging departments of the city government and the county government. Because the city and the county have budget crunches, every so often they talk about efficiencies from combining some functions of Parks and Rec or social services. They won't talk about the big one, which of course is schools, but they'll, are there any departments of the governments of the city of Charlottesville and Albemarle County that you think are worthy of study for possible new cooperation? You know, you all do run Dardentown Park, which named for a former city councilor, but it's in Albemarle County. It's a city county owned park. There are ways in which those two jurisdictions do cooperate, and on the airport. Richard.
The city is a geopolitical entity of its own, and it has certain privileges that the county doesn't have. And the county operates as a geopolitical entity of the state. So it's a little bit difficult there. It's also the history of annexation and so forth, and the splits of the sales tax. There appear to be many places where we have duplication of services, but we have a divide in how these are seen by the different entities that control the county and the city. The county has historically been bipartisan, where we have Democrats and Republicans on the Board of Supervisors. The city has gone entirely Democratic. And I think that where, you know, this obviously some of the functions of the school, the fire department, the county is the regional health care center for the, you know, middle of Virginia. it's a regional health care center. So there are many places where you can say this would work, but to make it work, we've got to sit down and change a lot of attitudes and a lot of policies. And we've got to, you know, I don't know whether the city wants to go through reversion and to become a geopolitical, more compatible with the county, or whether we're going to remain entirely different. But before we can start about it, we've got to get our relationships and our levels of trust built. And then we can look at where do we make sense. Schools are obvious. The county's got a need for schools. The city's got some schools that are not being used adequately. So where do we go with that? I think we need to sit down and first make friends with each other and get on the same page and the same set of laws. Thank you.
Richard Randolph.
Well, one could write a textbook about this. This is an extremely complex question, but I would like to first note that we already have cooperation in terms of water. We derive water from the same source, work actively together on that. Secondly, having served on the Solid Waste Solutions Committee for the county, I'm very aware of the fact that we share McIntyre together right now, and part of our vision is to do more together between the county and the city in terms of solid waste. And they certainly have the template, and we are developing it to mirror what they've done. Stormwater management, we have recommendations coming out of a committee shortly that will probably mirror in some ways what the city has already done on stormwater management that are dictated mainly by federal and state actions, have nothing to do with the Obama administration. We also have high level of police department cooperation. My son was a police officer 4 years in Charlottesville and was frequently told me about the level of cooperation between the two, and that's increased under Colonel Sellers. The fire department, right now Pantops is covered partly by the City of Charlottesville Fire Department in certain situations. One of the reasons the Board of Supervisors did not feel there was a need for a fire engine to be placed in Pantops, because there's adequate coverage by the city as well as by East Ravenna Fire Department. And finally, the last thing that we're looking at is rescue squad. We all know we have a volunteer rescue squad based in the city that comes out into the county. So there is a lot of grounds here for the basis of further cooperation between the two. I'd love to talk about any of those in a just a single topic, but time doesn't exist.
And Earl Smith.
I think I this is a subject that I don't know that much about, but just from my experience of living here my whole life, I think Albemarle and Charlottesville have worked together well, except when it comes to a few money issues. And we all know, whether it's your brother or sister, your son or your daughter, money always throws a little bit of wrench in the issues. You know, one of my suggestions, it's like the YMCA that's brought up, you know, talking about McIntyre Park, and you talked about Dardentown Park. I'm not against the YMCA, but I'm against where it's being placed. Why? Because you've got an incredible amount of people that use that softball field. They go down there and play. There's four leagues. It's probably 300 or 400 players. Where are you going to displace those people? When it was talked about, you're going to send them to Dartintail Park. Well, there's not enough lights. Why are you displacing those people? You have two sections of the park, okay? The one side that's being used extensively. Then you got the other side that hardly anybody plays on that golf course. The kiddie pool that I swam in is closed. Makes better sense to me. Why wouldn't you put the YMCA on that side? You have more impact. They could take care of the golf course. They could have the swimming pools. That is more, it is a better area for that. Not displacing people that are currently using it, putting it on the side that nobody's over there. That's common sense.
And Norman Dill.
Well, three quick points. UVA should be part of that conversation, too, especially with transportation. We have different transportation systems. UVA has their own buses. We have city and county buses with some cooperation, but that could be done on a regional level much more effectively. Second, somebody mentioned the Ravenna Sewer and Water Authority, that is the city and county. Just as an example of the reasons why it could be combined, we just spent $3 million to determine who should pay how much. There's no more water being produced or saved, but we just didn't know how many millions of gallons were going to the city versus the county. So all of us, city and county residents, had to pay that $3 million cost to put in these meters on a lot of the pipes. And I think another way to think about cooperation is on non-governmental issues, some of the civic organizations. I was the last president of Charlottesville Albemarle Recycling Together in the 1980s to get recycling going, which ended up with the recycling center on McIntyre Road down there. Thank you. So the citizens can do a lot of the cooperation, too. The local food hub is another one. It's a perfect city-county. The food is all grown in the county, but it's mostly sold to restaurants and stores like Rebecca's in the city. So the local food hub is not supported by the government. It's supported by the Dave Matthews Band quite a bit, but other donations. But it's a great city-county cooperation. The food can be grown in the county and sold in the city.
And Mr. Gaughan, Lawrence Gaughan, thoughts on this?
Thank you for some of the great points that have been made by everybody up here. Just broadly speaking, taxes are too high. Everyone agrees with that. Everyone I talk to when I knock on doors agrees that that's the problem. And it's the problem in the county and the city. And we can't depend on the city to take up the burden of some of these things. But there are a lot of issues that I would like to address. But I don't have time. But one of them is swimming pools. We don't have a county swimming pool. So we have to go to the city pool. If you want to use a public pool, you go to the city. And you have to pay more if you live in the county. That's something that I would like to address. And just, change in terms of what we do as county residents. A good point was the Pantops. This proposed fire station would cost the county a lot of money needlessly right now, because we have coordinated we have coordinated services with the city to bring fire and rescue to those areas. So coordination and cooperation in terms of vital public services needs to be expanded. And that is the bottom line. And I'll just wrap up by saying that I thank you, everybody, for being here. I thank the center for hosting this forum. I know we have some questions from the audience, and I'd be glad to answer those. And thank you again.
We've got to take one question which came from these cards, and I'm going to start with Mr. Randolph on this one. The court system, of course. Charlottesville Circuit Court will always be in Charlotte, in the middle of Charlottesville, where it is on High Street, built in the 60s. We've got a recently renovated Juvenile Domestic Relations Court, which handles J&D cases from both the city and the county. But the Albemarle Circuit Court obviously has a tremendously full docket, and the people who have business, including some of the people that have been in this room, have complained about the lack of parking in downtown Charlottesville, and there have been rumblings for years about the need for either a new location or a new dynamic around that Albemarle Circuit Court where there would be adequate parking. And some people have even threatened to have an Albemarle Circuit Court be relocated to the county. How do you feel about that? Let's ask about the courts. This will be the last question for each of the five candidates. We'll start with Mr. Randolph, then Mr. Smith, and then we'll come around to the three Rivanna candidates.
Well, I appreciate that soft lob to the net. The court used to be in Scottsville, and there would be a ton of people in Scottsville that would be delighted to have the county court return to Scottsville. So I will propose that we go to the status quo ante and move the court back down to Scottsville.
I second that.
Now, I'm being realistic here. That isn't going to happen. The reality is, if we had a Virginia Beach alternative where Virginia Beach was caught in the 1960s with a need to relocate their court, they had an adequacy of rural land, and they moved it out into a rural area, and they built an infrastructure in the middle of nowhere, and of course everybody then had to drive out there. Maybe that would work, but we want to try to protect the rural area as much as possible at a 95-5 combination. So I don't see that as a realistic alternative. Therefore, I would say with no facetiousness about Scottsville, I think the appropriate thing is to work this out with the city in a timely manner and see that the courts remain where they are, simply because there is so much infrastructure built now in the city that supports the court system in terms of law offices and other services, that I think it would be hugely disruptive to the area to relocate it.
And Mr. Smith?
I would have to agree with Mr. Randolph on that. It's very hard to move something that way. I mean, my suggestion would maybe to take it to the county office building. That would work down there. There's probably infrastructure in that building that they could rearrange. My only other suggestion would be to work with the city of Charlottesville. If we're having people complain they don't have a parking space, then there's two parking garages down there. Why don't we have a shuttle service? You know, shuttle service to take people over there if they're seniors or somebody that's handicapped. I think that would be, you know, that's another job. Just might be one little job created. Get a little rickshaw guy running around. I don't know. Not trying to be crazy there, but you know, have you ever ridden a rickshaw? Don't laugh. They charge me extra.
And now, Mr. Dill, on that topic.
Yeah, I think a big issue there is the lawyers themselves often have cases in both city and county courts on the same day or even the same afternoon. And so it's a pretty inefficient use of the time for the lawyers involved, the city employees involved, and county employees involved to try to schedule things in that way. I think parking is a lot easier to solve than building a multi-hundred-million-dollar complex out in the county between the land and the maintenance and the initial cost. So I'd lean towards trying to find out some way to keep them in the city. What I do like to think about in terms of a big picture plan, though, is it would be nice if Albemarle County had some kind of center. When all of us say, when people ask where you're from, when you're traveling, of course, we all say Charlottesville. Nobody says I'm from Albemarle County unless you're trying to differentiate, you know, your voting precinct or something. So it'd be great. I mean, as an ultimate example, in Marin County, this county center is designed by Frank Lloyd Wright, and it's this, you know, glamorous, you know, mid-century modern building. They have, you know, huge events there. It's a real county center that's significant, and we don't have that in Albemarle. Even our county office building is in the city, so it's a little hard to be a destination name when we're dominated by Charlottesville, even though we have 726 square miles and they have 10, but somehow we're all lumped into Charlottesville.
And Mr. Gaughan.
Yes, I agree. It's too late now to make that change, to propose building a whole new court building in the county would have been my choice, you know, years ago, perhaps before the remodeling was done and all that money was spent. I would say that we have the opportunity to do something that I've seen the model in Los Angeles County, which is a satellite court using modern technology, a video court system where you have the magistrate or the judge on video, and you go up to the to a video monitor, and you present your case through that procedure. And being that I'm proposing cuts to the capital investment budget, I would say that we could do this by building a center at a reduced cost, taking advantage of public-private investment at a time now when we have low interest rates, and doing it through a bond measure and borrowing the money rather than raising taxes to do this. A court center could be done in a very fine fashion, and it wouldn't be in Scottsville. I'm sorry, guys, but we could put it in Ravenna District, in fact. So that would be my solution. And while I'm talking about technology, you guys heard from the city council candidate Anson Parker about the app that he promotes, that he has developed for the city, called bringing more accountability and exposure. I am developing, actually working with Anson to develop a similar app for the county. So this type of thing, technology is the answer to a lot of our problems as we move forward. Again, I would propose a video satellite court, and I hope that we can get this Albemarle County app developed, and it will be called Super Albemarle. Thank you.
And Richard Lloyd, you'll be the last of the candidates from this forum.
Thank you. We agree on something. The court system is going through modernization. There are all kinds of technologies that are coming into the court system as it becomes more and more complex, and it becomes a technologically centered organization. Our courts, you go into them now, and they're the same as they were 100 years ago. We moved Martha Jefferson. And when we moved Martha Jefferson, we got a lovely hospital. We got a regional health care facility out of it. The lawyers, the doctors, the professionals moved with that, and a lot of the doctors are now moving in and building their practices around the hospital, the Martha Jefferson Hospital. We still have UVA Hospital in the city. I don't know that it's all that much trouble to build a county legal complex where the lawyers will have their offices, where the courts can be expanded and modernized, where there's parking available. In the city, we've got increased density coming. The city's moving up and increasing the density. The roads are small to begin with. Getting in and out, you say it's convenient for the lawyers. Well, it's hard to get in and out in the early morning and the late afternoon. I live on Pantops, and we just see the floods of people coming under the bridge at 64 getting into the city who live in the county and work in the city. And it's becoming a problem that's going to continue to grow. I think that it's time we just sit down and look at it and decide what do we need to do to make the courts more efficient, to make the courts more accessible, and to provide parking for the people who use the court system.
Thank you very much, all five candidates. Again, both city and county, November 3rd is Election Day 2015. Thank you.
For the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, I'm Dan Gould.